And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, the inauguration has taken place. We have a very tight situation with regard to the legislature. The judiciary is still stacked against the people. The executive is the branch of government that's giving people a lot of hope. What do you think? Are we looking at checkmate or are we looking at stymie?
We don't know. There are certainly signs that we're looking at checkmate, the Democrats being able to check what's happened. Biden has come out strong in certain areas. He came out with a strong economic plan. In the words of Paul Krugman, he came out big, not small. We saw the Republican reaction to that. I mean, you had Mitt Romney all of a sudden saying, well, we can't spend that kind of money because it wasn't being spent on millionaires and billionaires like himself.
Romney mischaracterizes what the money is all about. He talks about it and calls it a stimulus package, but it's not a stimulus package. It's a relief package. And correct. A stimulus package, he makes a point that you got to wait and see whether the economy gets stimulated. We're not waiting to see if the economy is stimulated. We're making sure people don't starve to death and don't get thrown out of their homes.
Yeah, we had another 900,000 people filed for new unemployment claims this week. It's down from last week, but still it's a huge number, and it's been up from what the numbers were in the fall. So these people do need relief very, very rapidly, getting them through the winter. I mean, that was one of the other things that Biden came out with, was a moratorium on evictions. And, you know, if you want a stimulus, that's going to be the infrastructure bill. That's going to come out somewhere down the road.
Exactly.
But if that's where we have to see if we're going to be stymied, because what you were alluding to was the fact that the Senate is split 50-50. The House, the Democrats have a narrow margin, and they'll be able to do what they need to do, even with the narrow margin. The Senate, though, is in this perplexing situation where it's exactly tied. And people realize that, well, with Kamala Harris there as the presiding officer, as the vice president, she can break the tie on votes. However, in order to get to that position, the procedures in the Senate are that they have to, one of the things that they have to do first is to come to an agreement as to how the Senate will operate. And they have not been able, with a 50-50 split, they have not been able to come to that agreement. And under the Senate rules, until they do, the Republicans remain in control because they have the current and ongoing set of rules that are of operation. And so Mitch McConnell still has some considerable leverage in this. They're trying to negotiate because otherwise the Senate committees are going to be run by Republicans rather than Democrats. And the things that
they set the agenda, right?
And they set the agenda. That's right. The committee chairs decide what's going to come out of committee or what's going to be decided, what's going to be brought up at committee. And
so it's important to make people understand this. We're not talking about an empty formality. This is a very autocratic system. What the committee is able to tackle, what they're able to debate, what they're able to do, what they're able to vote on, is completely in the hands of the chairperson of the committee.
Yes. And then the other thing
is, and the composition of the committee is the same, right? How many members are Republicans and how many Democrats?
That's where I was just going. Absolutely. If McConnell says, well, we have a 50-50, so each committee should be 50-50, nothing's going to get done because the Republicans will be able to stymie the Democrats.
Right. Kamala Harris doesn't get to vote in the committees. She only gets to vote on the floor.
Correct. So you'll get a vote of a committee with 20 people. You'll get a 10-10 vote. And then it doesn't get to the floor. Although there are procedures to bypass that and bring it directly to the floor, but they're more onerous and more difficult to do. So what the Democrats are negotiating is, A, we're going to be the heads of the committee. We're going to run the committees. And B, we're going to have a majority of people on the committee. And in certain committees, like the Judiciary Committee, it's important because of the appointments to federal offices there. So what had happened in some instances where the Republicans would get two more people on the committee than the Democrats, they'll probably wind up having the Democrats having only one more committee person than the Republicans on each of the major committees. And then don't forget, there's the subcommittees as well that get broken down into these things. So it's a process situation. The big thing, though, is what they're negotiating over the filibuster rule. The rule requires that you have at least 60 votes in order to stop debate on a particular subject. They don't do the filibusters like they used to in the old days, but still, if you don't have, if the Republicans can get away with saying that we're going to keep the filibuster, they're going to be able to stymie a lot of the legislation. Now, the one things that they won't be able to stymie is.
And by the way, before you go on that, many people who think about the filibuster have seen Jimmy Stewart's movie, Mr. Smith goes to Washington, and they think that you have to get up on your 2 feet and talk for 7 days. That's a filibuster. You keep talking. That's not how it works. All you do now is you just say, I'm going to filibuster. You don't actually do it. You just say, I'm going to do it. And that is recognized as if you were doing it, had done it.
Yeah. Now, a couple of times we've had some attempts at it. Didn't we have Ted Cruz got up once and then talked for 7 hours and with green eggs and ham?
Yep, he did.
And then Bernie has done it.
Bernie spoke for 8 hours.
Yeah. And, of course, they tried to shut Elizabeth Warren up, which she persisted.
Right.
You remember that?
Right.
That famous line there. Those are things that are going to...
Why don't they just let them filibuster? I mean, how long... You know, so they'll talk.
Well, that's what they really should do.
Yeah.
Put people to doing that, and that would diminish the frequency of the filibuster. Don't forget, the filibuster was rarely invoked until Barack Obama became president, and then Mitch McConnell invoked it all the time. He's the guy that broke the whole system. He tries to put it off on the Democrats, saying, "Well, then they went around the rule, and then they said." They changed the rule about filibustering and how many votes you need. No, they only did it because Mitch McConnell broke the norms.
And by the way, they only did it with judges.
Yeah. Mitch McConnell did it with everything.
Yeah.
But where I was going to say, where I was getting back to, was the fact that the Democrats can do a lot by reconciliation, where you only need 50 votes plus Kamala Harris.
Well, this is the point. This is the point that Bernie makes, that they can enact nearly everything they want to enact through the reconciliation process. Maybe you could explain that a little bit.
Well, this is part of the rule. Things that are affected by the budget, things that require the financing, are not subject to the filibuster rule. They just you just need a majority vote. So what the Republicans did when they put that tax cuts for the wealthy in and they changed a lot of the economics of things is they did that by reconciliation, where they only needed the 51 votes to do things. The Democrats, you know, a lot of their plans involve restructuring the financial things, and they can do that. They can just call it reconciliation. Now, the parliamentarian has to agree that it's a legitimate thing that has to do with budget. But
that's item by item, right?
Yeah, that's item by item. So,
and if it is a reconciliation item, it's handled by the Budget Committee, correct?
Correct.
Who's going to be the chairman of the Budget Committee?
Bernie Sanders.
Oh, my God.
So he's sitting pretty, I mean, well, he was sitting pretty at the inauguration.
Yep.
And he's,
Yeah, right.
And, of course, he's because of where he was sitting sitting pretty at the inauguration, he's sitting pretty everywhere now.
Right. That's right.
That icon, that meme is everywhere. He's selling sweatshirts for charity with that on it. He's popped up all over the mittens and what have you. If it hadn't been for that young woman, Bernie Sanders would have been the star of the show.
That's right.
The inauguration. And we should talk about that a little bit, because there's a deep contrast. We had three Wednesdays in a row where things happened. We had the insurrection, which was a bunch of angry white, mostly male, although there were women involved in it. Mm-hmm. A lot of white supremacists in that on the 6th of January, a week later on the 13th.
And apparently 20% were people who came out of the army or, you know, the military.
The military or the police.
Yeah.
The 13th, a week later on Wednesday, we had the impeachment, the second impeachment of Donald Trump. And then on the third Wednesday in January, on the 20th, we had this inauguration. And there we had a display of what America really looks like. You had women in high position. You had people of color. You had people of different ethnicities, people of different sexual orientations. And this is what the Trump nation is deeply afraid of. This is their greatest fear, that these folks would have power and they wouldn't. That the old status quo, the America through the 1950s, would be gone. And that's what Trump tried to gin up on the 6th when he got up there and said, you've got to take your country back. You've got to go up there and fight and be strong, giving them cues to what they were going to do. He said, I'll be there with you. And of course, he wasn't there with them. He didn't stay away, but this is what they're fighting for. And actually, this is what happened 4 years ago. Trump used the same themes. He told people that if Hillary was elected, that America was done, that their America was gone, that they would never get it back. But he was going to restore it with the judges and whatever. And to a great extent, he did that, at least temporarily. Now things are vastly different. And if you notice, one of the big differences is that his megaphone has been shut off. He's off Twitter. And the followers are kind of scrounging around, leaderless. They're still on their websites. They're still on Gab and Parler. By the way, did you notice that Parler finally, after Amazon cut them off or Google cut them off, I forget which one, they finally found a hosting platform out of Russia?
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, and Gab.
Do you know where Gab is located?
Well, it's located right here in Clark Summit now.
That's right, down the block from you.
Yes, yeah. Chris Kelly of the Scranton Times wrote a big article about that. They used to be in Music. The guy who runs it was from Music, but now they're in Clark Summit. They've improved the neighborhood a little. The neighborhood that they moved into is as a they haven't improved the neighborhood. We'd just as soon get them out of here, but they've moved up from Music to Clark Summit. So those things are out there, you know, and they're happening. And those are big changes. One thing that happened before the inauguration at the last minute were all these pardons that the Trump issued.
What's interesting about the pardons, if you look at the pardons, the people who were pardoned are basically people who were convicted of corruption.
Yeah.
Stealing from the government.
Yeah. White collar criminals. They were taxed. The person who was involved with Bob Menendez.
Stole from Medicaid.
A lot more money than Mark Rich ever did.
Right.
It was the Mark Rich pardons on steroids. And, you know, Steve Bannon got a pardon, you know, for he hasn't even been tried yet, let alone convicted, but he got a pardon. His scam, well, first of all, you had the Trump scam that Mexico was going to pay for the wall. Well, Mexico didn't pay for the wall. So Bannon and a Chinese friend of his came up with this scam that we were going, that they were going to solicit private donations from the Trump world. And so they did.
As if the wall was like the base of the Statue of Liberty, which that's how that got paid for, was private solicitation to the public to come in and put up the Statue of Liberty.
Except Lee Iacocca, who was in charge of that, was honest.
Yeah.
And so they get all these suckers who believed that China was going to pay, Mexico was going to pay for the wall, gave money to Bannon and his associate, and they skimmed it off. So Bannon walked away. And I guess at the last minute, Judge Jeanine's husband, who was also a scammer, got a pardon. On this. The people who didn't get pardons, though, that expected it, were all the people who rushed up to the Capitol on the 6th.
Right.
Donald Trump could have issued a Jimmy Carter-like pardon, a mass pardon. He didn't do it. He betrayed them again. You know, these folks never learned that it was always a one-way street with Trump. He demanded loyalty, but as someone said, there was
fascism is a one-way street.
Involved.
Fascism is a con played on working people who are convinced by the fascists that this is a movement that's going to fight and produce things in their interest, but which always produces and only produces things in the interest of the people who oppress them, the people who profit off them, the people who cheat them, the corporations who exist because they're able to skim the profits from their labor. That's who fascism benefits, but it doesn't exist unless a lot of working people are convinced otherwise. So fascism is basically a con game.
Yeah, well, and it's got a long history of working as a con.
Yeah. So it's no surprise that fascists are con artists.
Yeah. And, of course, we've had the con artist in chief in the White House for the last 4 years until this past Wednesday.
The interesting thing is that some fascists understand how to manipulate politics and how to manipulate their systems and what they can do to and not do. Hitler was like that. Mussolini was like that. Franco was like that. But Trump was not like that. Trump really, when it came down to it, had neither the courage nor the brains to know what to do. I mean, last week there was this story about how he tried to change the leadership of the Department of Justice. So, because Bill Barr wasn't ruthless enough for him. So he's going to get other guys to make sure that the results of the vote would be thrown out. The votes wouldn't be certified, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when it came down to it, he couldn't find anybody who would do it. And he himself, he did find someone to do it who said he would do it, but he didn't have the balls to put him into office. Isn't that what happened?
Yeah. You know, when Bill Barr bailed out, and we still don't know exactly why, and it's interesting that Barr has been critical of things since he bowed out, as if he's trying to rehabilitate his highly tarnished reputation. He put in this guy, Jeffrey Rosen, who was generally seen as a weakling, as a caretaker.
Careful about how you mention that name.
Okay. All right.
Let's just call him Jeffrey.
Jeffrey, okay. well, you know, there's a lot of different...
there are no Jeffreys in my family. I've done a study.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. Anyhow, Jeffrey was seen as someone who would bend more to Trump's liking. And it turns out that he wouldn't go as far as Trump wanted. And Trump, some fellow by the name of Clark, auditioned for the part, just like we had... just like we had Bill Barr auditioned for the part by saying really things that Trump wanted to hear. And Trump's idea was to get rid of Jeffrey and put Clark in control, and Clark would go down and declare martial law, or give cover to the declaration of martial law to keep Trump in power. And it didn't work. Turns out Jeffrey was strong enough to fight back, would not back down, would not resign. And when push came to shove, he brought in reserves, which was essentially all the remaining heads of the different divisions of the Justice Department, or people in similar circumstances, who said, if you do this, if you get rid of Jeffrey and you bring in Clark, we're all going to resign. And this is going to look like the Saturday Night Massacre. And this is only going to stir up more trouble for you than what Jeffrey can wind up doing. So that coup did not occur in the Justice Department.
You see, that was his undoing, Trump's undoing, because yep. What Trump should have said at that moment was, close the door quietly on your way out. Because if you're going to do a coup, you do it. You can't yep. do it by half measures, or you don't get it done.
Yeah.
I mean, do you mean to tell me Giuliani couldn't have found five people to take over the Justice Department? Who the hell is Jeffrey? What did he know? Or who the hell is the guy that was going to take over? He didn't know anything. Any lawyer. These people only had a month or so that they had to run the thing. Then he could have found other, patsies right. to run the damn thing.
Yeah, it was even less. This was in January. He only needed a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's
right. They didn't. Machiavelli, when you come for the king, you better get the king.
You gotta get the king. That's right. This fellow didn't understand it.
Yeah, there's a scene in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly where Eli Wallach's character, Tuco, is being confronted. He's caught in a bathtub, and this guy is going to get revenge on him and starts talking, and Tuco winds up shooting him and says, when you come to kill someone, shoot. Don't talk. Shoot.
So that brings us to the Democrats.
Yeah.
So now the Democrats are in power, out in the executive
yeah.
branch.
Yeah.
You've talked about what Bernie could do if the rest of the Democrats go along with the reconciliation idea. Although I wonder if anybody does have to go along with it, if he can't just do it on his own. But apart from that, what will they do? What must they do? Everybody says they got 2 years. What must they do?
Well, first of all, let's acknowledge Biden did some things that Trump didn't do. He fired a few people.
Right.
He fired the legal people at the NLRB.
Very important, that. Very important.
Very important. He told the chief lawyer, resign. The guy said no. He said, you're fired. The second in command, he said, we want you to resign. She said no. He fired her. He fired the head of the VOA, the Voice of America, who was in there planting cronies and disrupting the mission of the agency. So he
fired the usher.
Yeah.
Somebody fired the usher because Biden couldn't get into the White House.
He couldn't get into the White House. Yeah. Well, we'll see about that. By the way, when he got in the White House, did you notice he put the bust of Cesar Chavez?
Yes, I saw that. Right.
Behind him. That's a big difference.
And took
that's
Churchill's bust out.
Yeah, he took Churchill's bust out. And he doesn't care.
And took Jackson's picture down.
Yeah. And who did he replace Jackson with? I forgot now. It was an appropriate exchange to be done. But anyway, you're asking what else he had to do. What he has to do is show people what he's doing and that it's going to benefit them.
Well, first of all, he has to do things that benefit them. That's the main thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Right now, they've been showing things that the Trump administration was deficient in, like distributing vaccines. But he's got it. First of all, he's got to get it right. And he has people in there who should be able to get it right. But then
just talking about cons before we go further.
Yeah.
Trump made his whole thing was we're going to have the vaccine and that's going to solve the problem. Therefore, you don't have to wear masks and we can open up the country, blah, 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 blah. The whole, I won't say strategy because there wasn't a strategy, but the whole approach was the vaccine will solve the problem. Even so, what it, and then it turned out that when people were going to get the vaccine, they had to take two shots. That's the way the vaccine works. And right. the Trump people said, no problem. We got it. We got the reserve. And it turns out they lied about that. There was no reserve. There is no reserve. And it also turned out they had no plan whatsoever to distribute the vaccine. It's like going into a war and the quartermaster department says, don't worry about it. We got the tanks. We got the guns. We got the bullets. So the war starts. The general says, okay, send it out. And the quartermaster general says, send what out? Right?
Yep. Yep. By the way, they also fired Jerome Adams. Was he the Surgeon General of the White House? Yeah, they fired him as well.
Well, they should fire everybody. All of these guys are crooks. Intellectually corrupt.
They didn't fire Fauci, who looks like a new man. He's unshackled now.
Yeah.
But anyway, the one person he should be firing is the Postmaster General.
Well, hopefully he'll get around to that, because that's an appointment. That's an important appointment.
And people are seeing that. People all over are noticing the deficiencies in the post office. Late mail, things like bills aren't getting paid, all over the place. It's just incredible. Packages aren't being delivered.
But anyway, back to what the Dems need to do.
Yeah. Well, they got to do things to show competence and that they're doing things for ordinary people. And then they have to let the people know they're doing them.
Right.
It's not enough to say we've got this and we've done it. What you need is that megaphone that Trump used incessantly to say, this is what we've done, this is why we've done it, and this is how it's going to benefit you.
Exactly.
And if it's like if the tree falls in the forest and no one's there to listen, what good is it? You got to know that this is the Democrats doing things for you. Trump was taking credit for things the Democrats did.
Yeah, like the veterans laws.
Right. Right. So on the tax laws,
And by the way, this is an important distinction between fascists and Orthodox Republicans. Orthodox Republicans really don't believe the government should do anything. Fascists believe the government should do a lot, but they believe the government should do it in the interest of corporations. Well, the point is that most people want government to help. What was Trump's statement? I alone can solve this. I can do this. I'll get it done for you. They don't get it done for you. The Democrats have to step up and say government can help you, and here's how government will help you and does help you.
Well, that's why the Republicans keep trying to stymie things. Their greatest fear is not that a program will fail. Their greatest fear is that the program will work.
And I heard Rush Limbaugh say that about the Obamacare many times. Is you let this Obamacare sink in and people will never let you get rid of it. And for him, that was bad.
Yeah. It was like what they said with Medicare.
Yeah.
We can't, then years before with Social Security. You can't let it happen, because if it happens and it works, people are going to like it.
There's a cartoon from the 1930s. A captain on a boat sees people in the water. They're floundering. And the captain says to the mate next to him, if we throw them a life preserver, they'll never learn to swim.
Yeah.
Right?
That's it. That's the Republicans'
ideology. That's the Republican ideology. Exactly. And the Democrats have to counter that loudly, or they're done. Or they're done for.
Right. And what the Republicans will do, if the one or two people do in fact wind up swimming, they'll laud them as the great example and pretend that all the people that drowned didn't exist.
Or it was their own fault.
It was their own fault.
Yeah. Which is what they usually say. You're poor because you have a character fault.
Right.
All right. That's it for this moment. Another week. Let's see if we're going to have progress toward checkmate or progress toward being stymied. Let's hope for the Democrats figuring out a way to checkmate what the Republic. Trump did.
All right.
See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City. 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.